welcome to the Men of Aid Gang podcast for Saturday, May 23rd, 2009. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Phil Wilson.
Good morning. It sounds like music from Top Gear or something.
Thank you. And Graham Thickens. Graham?
Happy Memorial Day weekend.
There he is. And we're very pleased to have a special guest on with us today, Marty Nyman. How you doing, Marty?
Outstanding. And I won't say anything about the music. I think it got me all peppy.
These guys are always critiquing my music. So I just, you know, I'm trying to mix it up a little bit. But
well, you're using all the free stuff, right?
I'm trying. Yeah. Yeah. Because I got an FBI agent across the street, so I got to be careful. So, Marty, you are, you've been a senior business development exec for more than 20 years in energy, telecom, and retail, because you were responsible for the formation and launch of Best Buy's venture capital practice. But apparently you are off on a new adventure with serial entrepreneur John Montague in something called 40 Ventures. So what's that all about, and what are you guys up to?
Well, it was an interesting confluence of events that John and I ended up connecting on this new venture. And for kind of a quick background, when I ran the venture capital practice at Best Buy, one of the biggest problems that I observed in working with over 400 venture-backed startups is the fact that there are a lot of really good ideas out there and in all sectors. And there are just as many really great entrepreneurs out there who can take these ideas and build them into businesses. But what I found and what I learned was that the process that determines which of these ideas and people ultimately get funding and get a chance to grow and succeed and thrive is really it's a number of things. It's a really inefficient process. And if you've followed the trend of how many deals a typical VC looks at before they decide on investing in them, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's kind of a broken process. And so John and I came together on this same issue, but from two different perspectives, and led to the creation of what 40 Ventures is.
So tell us a little bit about what's the plan as far as 40 Ventures. You're going to do it, how many ventures a year, and et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. What 40 Ventures is, it's going to be equal parts of a seed fund as well as a venture development enterprise, in that we will be taking in 5 companies a year. We'll be having a rigorous screening process with which entrepreneurs will apply to be considered for entry into the 40 Ventures operation. We will have those 5 companies come into the facility on a full-time basis, with which John and I and a full network of mentors and subject matter experts to work closely with developing these businesses on a hands-on basis, connecting them with people in industry, subject matter experts, and overall business mentors, with the end goal being that towards the third quarter of the year, that we will be taking these companies on the road show, in which we'll be meeting with investors, whether they're angel or seed or even venture capital firms, and getting them their first round of institutional funding.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be done on a 1-year basis, 5 companies at the end of the year. Companies get funded, go on, and we start the cycle up the next year.
Now, are you going to do this in Minnesota, in the region? Are you looking at national opportunities? Where's the focus?
Well, the facility will be here in Minneapolis. The intent is we'd love to try to raise the bar in terms of keeping all of the opportunities local as possible. But we also know that there's not a geographic limit on good ideas. So we are going to be national in our scope of which type of opportunities we're going to consider. But again, the intent is we're going to be based here locally. We're hoping that a good number, if not most, of the entrepreneurs that work in the facility, that come into the facility, will be Minneapolis-based or Minnesota-based, and then we'll see what kind of results we get in terms of the applicants.
You mentioned the word facility, Marty. Would you call this then an incubator kind of a concept?
It's a great question, Graham. I think one of the things that I think everyone who's been in this business long enough has a point of view on what incubator means.
Mm-hmm.
And, unfortunately, a lot of times that name has been associated with something that just didn't work. The intent may have been right, but there are an abundance of different incubators, whether they've been state-run or affiliated with a university or privately run. So fundamentally, we do share the same notion that we are taking in typically going to be a founder pair who have a great idea and a great market opportunity, but surrounding them with all of the help and the resources and the connections to help them dramatically reduce the risk in their venture, which is probably the biggest issue that young startups have, is when they get in front of investors, the idea may be great, the investors may like the team, but for where they're at in the life stage of their company, there's too much risk for the investors to absorb. Mm-hmm. So among the things that we're really focusing on is, one, is de-risking as much as possible this early stage of the idea. And two is to get them as fully prepared so that when they get in front of investors, the investors look at them and say, yeah, this is really a very attractive business to invest in. We like everything that's there and we're going to support them.
Can you tell us about the plans for raising the fund? And, describe what's going on there and the timing implications and that sort of thing.
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, it's a hybrid model in which we are effectively going to be a seed fund. So one of the things that we do that may not have been explicit when I mentioned earlier is we will be giving these startups the initial capital to get the idea going and get the initial development done to launch their idea. So in exchange for both the seed capital we provide them and the expertise and the guidance and support, that in turn will translate into equity, which we will be receiving in the company. So it's sort of a shared risk, shared gain opportunity. But as far as your question goes, Graham, as far as raising the fund, we are right now in the process of speaking with investors who are largely going to be the limited partners for 40 Ventures. And we're striking out a pretty big network as far as who we're talking to and the individuals that we believe that would be interested in investing in this. Characteristically, they have to be investors who are comfortable with early stage investing. So that doesn't necessarily limit it, but it definitely defines who the investor audience will be. And so ideally, we're looking for people who, whether they're institutions or high net worth individuals, or foundations who have had experience or have an understanding of early stage investing. And as far as their overall investment portfolio goes, this is an important part of this strategy.
Do you want to talk about the size, the planned size of the fund?
Right now, it's based on our current projections, this is an 8-year fund. In other words, we're going to be launching, as the number 40 goes, 5 companies a year for 8 years. So the entire duration of the fund will be 8 years. In order to support the companies that we are going to invest in and fund the operations, we're looking at a total of about $20 million.
Okay.
What are the parameters of the companies that the startups you're going to consider, or the entrepreneurs you're going to consider?
And when you say parameters, are you talking about sectors or?
Yeah. Are you looking at specific sectors? Are you looking at specific size or markets that you want to work within?
Absolutely. I'm going to answer that in two parts. One is I want to talk a little bit about the sectors that are of interest to us. And then I also kind of want to speak to the the incoming attributes that we'll be looking for in an investor, in a startup. So because of the nature of how we do this and the kind of companies we're looking to invest in, we're looking for companies that are fairly lightweight business models. And by that, I mean they don't require tens of hundreds of millions of dollars to ultimately realize the opportunity. This is just not a good fit for us in terms of we're a seed stage investor, and we're going to be looking to introduce these companies to investors who typically do traditional venture stage investing, a couple of million dollars, up to $5 to $10-$15 million. So capital intensive industries, we're not going to really focus on. We're not going to be working with medical device companies simply because we already believe there's an abundance of that types of activity already taking place here in the Twin Cities.
You got that right.
So it's a vibrant, part of the system here, but we just aren't going to, there's enough activity going on there, enough said. So we are looking at companies that also, I forgot to mention, businesses that have a long regulatory approval cycle are probably not going to make our cut either, because it's just going to be outside the time horizon that we're looking for in terms of realizing the gains on these companies. So if it takes you 7 years to get your product approved in order to get to market, that's a little long for us. So we're looking at things such as software as a service offerings, whether that's consumer or enterprise or commercial. We're looking at social media, which, Graham, you should be happy about.
Oh, yeah.
We're looking at digital media, online retail, mobility. Again, these are businesses that, number one, I think have clearly proven there are large growth potential associated with, but they're also fairly easy companies to get started, provided you have a really good idea and something that's unique and compelling. We're also, there's an area that's, you know, coming from my experience working in consumer electronics industry before, there's a call for computing simplification. And I've not heard that word used much in recent months, but in general, it simply means that if there are innovations out there that can make the computing experience a simpler but more effective solution, then we're interested in exploring that. And I think the iPhone and the apps on the iPhone is probably a good example and demonstration of that.
Beautiful. One other quick question, Marty. You mentioned you're going to take an equity position in each of the five companies that you accept each year. What percentage do you have in mind, and will it be common or preferred?
The percentage is still being analyzed, because we have to balance the need to get fair compensation for the value we provide, but also we don't want to overburden the cap table so that later on when they go to investors, it becomes either the founders take a dramatic dilution, or the investors just don't like the current configuration of the capitalization table. So it's not going to be an overly burdensome number, but it is going to be something I think that's going to be reflect the value we provide to them. So we're still working on exactly what that is. Okay. It's probably going to be founder shares. And right now we don't have any, we haven't drafted documents, but we like to believe that, you know, we're in this along with the entrepreneur, and recognize that there will be dilutive effects taking place later on, but that's just part of the shared risk, shared reward that we believe in.
What do you guys, go ahead, Graham. Oh, I was just going to ask about, I mean, obviously Mini Demo is one place, and Ignite and so on, but where are you going, or what are you doing to expose yourselves to great entrepreneurs and ideas?
I think all of those are great venues for us to be more visible, whether we do it through sponsorships, whether we do it through active participation in those venues. Yeah. From a timeline standpoint, we're a little bit early for coming out to those events, simply because we're focused solely on fundraising right now, which is taking up all of our energies.
Yep.
So we're anticipating that fundraising, as well as the opening of the facility, will take place towards the tail end of summer, early fall. The idea being that we're going to be eventually opening up the first round of companies will be coming into the facility on January 1. But those are all great venues that we need any and all help that we can to get the word out and to become clear as far as, you know, who we're looking for, what we're looking for, and how can they contact us.
Sure. I'm sure, Marty, that the entrepreneurs out there are all wondering what would be the size range of an investment that your fund would make, assuming their company were accepted as one of the five. Do you want to state that at this point?
It's not a single number right now. I will qualify it by saying it's typical seed money to get the idea developed into a working stage. By that I mean either a definable proof of concept, working beta, prototypes. And, you know, one of the things that I think is going to be critical is it's going to lead us to a path where they've got engagements with end customers before they hit the roadshow. Right now, the message we're getting from a lot of investors is, great idea, we love it, but you got to go get some customers in order for us to talk further. Mm-hmm. So typically, you know, early stage deals, and especially with the kind of business models we're talking about, we hear that's anywhere from $100,000 to $200,000 necessary to more than get them through that stage.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about what you're looking for, your criteria as you pick companies? Do you have to have a full business plan, and kind of what elements are you looking for in that business plan?
Well, the application process, one of the things that there are a couple of groups out there that have done have made a similar approach. And one of the things we like about what they've done is it's not necessarily about a fully baked business plan, although there's nothing wrong with the thought and effort that goes into it. But we're initially focused on the clarity of the idea, the reality of the demand. And that is, there are going to be, you know, some ideas, quite frankly, that are good ideas, but they don't by themselves merit the creating of a company. They may be a great feature that would be added to a platform or an offering, but by themselves, it will be hard to justify them being developed as a standalone business. So we're looking more at the idea, the heart of the idea, the demand and the need for this idea, just as important as the team behind it. And, you know, one of the clear things and learnings from working with venture capital is, you know, they truly do invest in team first and the idea shortly behind, because there are certain things you can change about an idea, but if you don't have the right team, if you don't have the right chemistry, if you don't have the experiences and the expertise, it's really hard. Those are things that the investors can't control.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the thing about customer and validation. We were sending around this link to one another about, it was a New York Times article about investors pay business plans little heed, study finds. And it was about, go ahead and write that 50-page business plan, but it's probably not going to do much to improve your chances of getting financing. And one of the things that one of the VCs said in here was that he looks for market validation, in other words, customers, and actual passion with those customers that have an interest. And so that's precisely what you said, is it's not the plan, it's the obviously the plan and the strategy and the idea, but it's validation from the marketplace.
Yeah, Steve, I think that's a fantastic point. And we are I think we're going into this at a really good time, because the market and the investors are placing a premium on both the quality of the idea and the viability of it. And I'm not disheartened by the fact that they're putting a much tighter standard on what the types of businesses that they support, because as we've probably all seen, there's been kind of an excess of the last several years of things getting funded that ultimately people ask the question, you know, who's going to buy this?
Yeah.
And I think you get no better validation than when you've got validated, you got customers who are using what you have, and you've got proven, you know, what do they call those, testimonials that say this is what the customers are using. And remember, VCs are an integral part of the process, but they don't know everything. And they think, a lot of times they think they do, but they really don't know until you've gone out there and proven it to them that this is a marketplace and this is what users look like and this is how they'll use the offering.
Yep.
And they will call up those customers and talk to them. I mean, VCs spend an inordinate part of their time talking to people out in the marketplace that are using products that they're thinking of investing in, right, Marty?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the enjoyable parts of my job at the venture practice at Best Buy was I would get those calls from the VCs.
Sure.
And they were you know, pointedly simple questions, but they would ask the question, you know, who would somebody realistically use this new thing or desire this new feature? And that was exactly to your point, that this is what they have to do to be able, they just can't take it on hearsay.
Yep.
But I want to jump back to one thing, and I think an important, the list of things that we're looking for beyond the business plan and the things that I mentioned about the quality and the caliber of the idea is the other attributes that we're looking for in terms of the idea and the company. One thing that's really important to us is a clear understanding of how they're going to go to market. And if we can get companies that have already established some type of distribution arrangements with a distribution channel partner, whether that's whether it's an OEM channel partnership, whether that's a VAR, whether that's an online commerce or what have you, that goes a long way to helping us get more comfortable behind the idea, because at the end of the day, the idea is only as good as your ability to get it to market. So having a clear and understandable path to deliver the product to market is going to give them an advantage. We're looking for one of the attributes is, and this is the fancier version of it, but we're looking for businesses that have a capital efficient model. In other words, a dollar in, you know, produces $3 worth of output. And that we're not looking for linear models as much as things that are well thought out that you can get a lot of output for a modest amount of capital going in.
So you're saying you're not going to fund building your own content management system and then going to Rackspace and buying a lot of running a lot of servers? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, there are a lot of really smart ways, and we're seeing this in various places where, you know, there are whether it's the free agent model of using coders to help do the, you know, develop the code, or use third party platforms to fulfill a very functional pedestrian part of the process. You don't have to create it all yourself.
Well, I hear cloud computing coming out of this too. You know, obviously, as there's no secret that many of the up and coming consumer internet kinds of startups are putting their infrastructure in the cloud as opposed to creating their own expensive data centers.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, Marty, one of the things that you touched on that has been it's more a dilemma than a problem, but it's something that has just dumbfounded me for a very long period of time. There are these Web 2.0 sites like go2web20.net, and I'll put that in the show notes, where there are hundreds of phenomenal startups that, you know, you'll see an article on TechCrunch or Mashable or ReadWriteWeb or Minovate about a startup, and then they're in the directory and you kind of never hear about them again. So the go-to-market strategy and how to get the word out and how to get your critical mass built of customers, how do you see that as a problem, or do you see that as a dilemma that can be overcome? Is that something you put a lot of weight on, I guess, is the question, in terms of the go-to-market strategy, and are they actually going to be able to make it happen?
I think that's a great observation, and I think that works, and perhaps our perspective is it works in two different ways. If you are going to go into a very fast-growing, very large, high-potential growth marketplace, you're going to expect that, and what comes with that is you're going to have, I think, you're going to have to be smarter than the average competitor in how do you get noticed. And that's particularly, you know, troublesome in some of these Web 2.0 plays where, you know, there's a lot of noise.
Yeah.
So I think it sets a higher bar as far as what are you going to do to get greater visibility. And it used to be, you know, if you got a little bit of a ping in TechCrunch, or you knew Arrington, and you could get a little bit of a plug, that would bump you up, and you'd see your site traffic, you know, jump to the window for the day, and then maybe it'll settle down. That's harder to do these days. So I don't think there's a short answer to your question. It's a valid question that if we are going to get into noisy spaces, but we believe the idea is unique and compelling, then the next layer that we're going to be looking at and examining that idea is what kind of things do exist that we can leverage. Some of that's going to be the responsibility of the entrepreneur. But on the other hand, you know, one of the purposes of how we're building 40 Ventures is that we have got a network of mentors, both in Minneapolis as well as on the coasts, that we are going to leverage in terms of helping us to develop smarter go-to-market plans.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That network includes people in the Web 2.0 space today. It's people in the investment communities, people in the large organizations. So we've started already the kind of the greasing of the skids for these folks is, hey, here's what we're doing, and we'd like you to be part of this network. And uniformly, to a person, they've all said, we'd love to be involved.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Say, Marty, I wanted to go down another path that you and I touched on when we met a week or so ago. You know, there are existing programs, which you alluded to a little earlier on the podcast, in other parts of the country, namely TechStars and Y Combinator. Do you want to talk a little bit about the differences and the similarities of 40 Ventures to either one of those?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Because I think what they've done is... so far, and I say that so far because they haven't been around. Y Combinator is probably the longest tenure of all of the two that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But so far, their model seems to be working. Mm-hmm. So let me, and then hopefully the audience, if you've not had a chance to look those two up, by all means do so, because I think you'll get a better understanding of what they do. So what we share in common is the belief that you have to be from the standpoint of to fulfill this goal of creating great companies and successful companies, you have to do it on a full-time, hands-on basis. There's just no way around it. You cannot part-time this. So we are in fully agreement that you have to do that. We also are in agreement that you want to take away the barrier that a lot of startups have, and that is getting that initial seed capital to get the thing going. And historically, as you know, people have done that through friends and family and hitting up your wealthy aunt if you happen to have one. But that money runs out really fast, and you can sour family relationships really fast as well if you're not careful. So we recognize that let's eliminate that barrier. Let's give them some walking around, working capital to get the idea developed and proven. We also share the same notion that you have a vast network of resources that can really accelerate. Because, you know, John and I have a lot of experience, but, you know, the collective value is far greater than just what John and I bring to the party. It's what all of the relationships that we bring to be able to help these startups. And we aren't in every sector. We aren't in every discipline. So when we need somebody who really understands subject matter X, we've got a mentor in our network that can really help them. So those are the things that we do share with Techstars and Y Combinator. And lastly, we have the same goal, get them funded, get them through the process, develop them, coach them, train them, shape them, and then get them money so that they can grow. Where we differ is probably on two major fronts. The duration of the time that the entrepreneurs are going to be in the facility is longer. Mm-hmm. And there are some reasons why we believe that. We think we want to get the companies a little bit further down the development path so that we've taken more risk out of the equation. And we believe we can do that in the additional several months that we are working with them. One of the things that we believe is, especially in the current environment, you know, early stage investors are spooked right now. And to a person that I've been talking to, they are applying a much tighter standard. So what I mentioned earlier about show me customers is in addition to they're going to quantify the risk. And we believe that additional duration in the facility will take more of that risk away that will make them more attractive to the investors. Obviously, the second thing that's different is it's here in Minnesota. And Techstars has proven the fact that you can create something vibrant outside of the valley, but it has to be done thoughtfully. And if you look at the lineup of the folks that are supporting Techstars, there's a lot of valley people there. And that comes from the fact that they've got very good relationships with the guys at Foundry Group, which are a bunch of ex-Silicon Valley venture guys who are now doing a great job out in Boulder. But they have clearly said we need a mentor network that includes people from the valley. And we're doing the same thing. But we're using the mentors of this area as well as the valley to help do that shaping. But it can be done, and increasingly we're seeing this type of model being being applied in other geographical areas, because the fact is entrepreneurs are not just confined to one particular part of the country.
Right. Or they have dispersed teams as well.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of these models can be done, you know, ultimately on the growth models, you can do them on a remote basis.
Techstars has a 3-month program for those who aren't aware of it over the summer, and they've recently started in Boston as a second location after Boulder. And they do require that those accepted into their program pretty much spend the 3 months in either of those locations. They have two programs going now, and I did chat with the guys at Foundry Group in Denver a couple of weeks ago. They do have ideas about taking that program to other parts of the country as well. And just a little aside, I've gotten both Brad Feld and Seth Levine to agree to come to town to speak at one of our upcoming events, hopefully mini bar in the fall.
Yeah, they're great guys. They're good friends of ours. Yeah, well, good to have them here.
I have a question, and this comes from, you don't know much about my background, Marty, but I was the VP of Strategic Alliances at Lawson Software. So going back into my 20s, I was mentored to understand and align people's incentives, whether you're selling or doing biz dev or doing alliances or JVs, make sure that you figure out where everybody's headed and who's strong and who's weak and align. And one of the things that I've noticed with Y Combinator and Techstars is that neither one of them is really focused on alliances or on partnering to accelerate certain aspects, whether it's just partnering with somebody that's got good distribution. And with your alliances background, do you see that as being a key part? Do you see it going away? Where does that fit into the overall equation?
That lends itself well to our point of view in terms of your go-to-market strategy.
Okay.
The challenge with alliances in the context that you talked about, Steve, is they're good when you've got kind of a quasi-equal balance of what both parties bring to the equation. So when I was working in my past experiences and working with alliances, the one thing that we that you referred to is you really look for, you know, what is it that you have the other guy doesn't and vice versa, and can they two be brought together in a kind of a 1+1=3 manner.
Right.
With startups, the imbalance a lot of times happens is you've got a good idea, but you got limited resources. So to the alliance or JV partner, you're going to have to be able to, you know, what else do you have that makes you attractive to them?
Right.
But it works well in channel relationships, and there's a lot of good leverage. We just had a discussion yesterday with an individual that, you know, talked in very strong terms about the fact that, you know, if you've got an established channel that already has relationships and influence and presence, then that's worth its weight in gold. And if you can create a good relationship with them, you know, what that does to accelerate your success is enormous. So the short answer to your question, I think it's a very good call out that it has to be part of the thinking. And that's part of why we bring mentors into this relationship with the startups, is to help them see these possibilities. I think one of the classic mistakes that are made early on for a lot of startups is they believe that they can do everything on their own. And it's not that they can't, it's just it's in the time and amount of money that you have, it may not be plausible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you think about, you know, how do you get there smarter and create different relationships? And that also extends as far into customers too. I mean, customers can be a tremendous source of your paid for R&D. You get great relationships with a customer base who really understands and needs and desires your product. You suddenly have a live, active, willing participant to help you fund that next phase in the development of your offering.
It's so funny you say that, because I remember, oh my gosh, probably 16, 17 years ago, going down to a Twin Cities Strictly Business Expo, WCCO had Kurt Carlson come in and talk about starting a company and being an entrepreneur and so on and so forth. And the one thing that stuck out was him saying exactly that, which is go to your suppliers. And he brought up stories about how he went to his suppliers and said, look, if you help me get this going, you're going to be my preferred vendor for fill in the blank product. And that's exactly what he ended up doing, and ended up getting some funding that way.
Yeah, yep. It's a beautiful thing when it works.
When it works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Say, one other question, Marty, going back to the companies that would be applying to your program. So assuming they are located in Minneapolis, that would be very easy for them to participate with you. But say a company that's in Wisconsin or Chicago or somewhere, would they be required to come to Minneapolis for the duration of your 1-year program? Or how would you handle that?
It's going to be very difficult to do it on a remote basis. So mm-hmm. Recognize that, you know, it is going to be for people who are outside of the state, it will be an additional set of things to consider. But we also look at it from the standpoint of, you know, this is the opportunity that they've been looking for to build a business. Mm-hmm. And that I think that we look for, you know, in any entrepreneur, that you have to have passion and you have to be committed, and to be able to put some, you know, some personal skin in the game to make this thing successful. So we will work with them as much as possible, but the intent is you're really not going to get the full value unless you're here. And, you know, one of the things that we're excited about is by having 5 of the companies in the facility is kind of the cross-pollination that happens between themselves.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. As they're working on a daily basis, there's going to be some really great things coming out of it. They learn from each other. And you're just not going to get that if you're, you know, if you're Skyping in every day. We will probably have occasions there if there's a really great idea, it's mature, it's established, and it can be dealt with on a remote basis, that we may have them in 40 Ventures, but they may be physically located somewhere else. But we're going to take those on a case-by-case basis.
Sure. I noticed the Techstars doesn't require you to spend the whole entire summer in Boulder, for example, in their Boulder program, but they expect you to spend the majority of your time there. In other words, they understand that you may have to go back and forth to wherever you're from, you know, it's a similar kind of a model in that respect, I think.
Yeah. And it's part of maybe our we're going to go have to, I'll say this tongue in cheek, we'll have to seek a endorsement from Minnesota Department of Tourism to convince people that this is actually a great place to live and you should come here. And
well, so Marty, are you actually taking applications for this program right now, or are you looking to roll that out later?
It will be, the application process will start early fall. Right now, though, the thing I think that would be instructive or meaningful for us is for start the dialogue with some of these companies locally that you know may be of interest, and there would be worthwhile discussion just to learn more about what they're doing. So, the formal application process will start in early fall, and for people if they want to reach out to us and kind of tell us what they're doing and do so in a kind of a short manner, we're happy to hear from those companies as well.
Once you start accepting applications, how long is the entire process before you actually fund the companies?
Yeah, we're going to have probably a month. The window for applications will be a month long. It'll take us the better part of another month to vet that to a short list and do some initial due diligence on the remaining number of companies. We'll probably do some more hands-on interviewing and background checking to get to the final set, but it'll probably be, I would say, a month and a half to 2 months from when the application window closes to when we've announced the final five companies.
And the application window will close, you said, about when?
1 month after it starts, which right now we're targeting either, early September, mid-September timeframe.
Sure. Do you have a website up someplace where all the application information is housed?
The website's being built right now, so stay tuned. We should. I'll reach out to you, Graham, for how to get that out and announced to the community as quickly as possible. Sure, right now, it's being built.
You bet. Yeah, we'll be happy to get all over that when it's ready.
Absolutely. Well, we are kissing up on the end of our show, and just wondered if anybody else had anything to jump in. I could ask you, Marty, what's with the musician aspect of you?
I could wax eloquently about the fact that, all business is akin to creating a great piece of music with the need for collaboration and inspiration and creativity.
Yep.
If left is said for that. But basically, music is a lifeblood for me. And I've played in bands since I was 15 years old and wow. Probably continued. So I'll be one of these 89-year-old guys in the heavy metal band.
I love that tie-in.
My son makes fun of me. He says, there's no way in hell you're getting on stage with me, Dad. I said, you'll be warming up for my band someday.
Well, I think it'd be cool to have some sort of an open house thing or a kickoff with, and get you and your bandmates on stage or something. Get the 40 Ventures rock concert going.
There
something.
We go. Hey, I'd sign up for that.
Graham, that's a great idea. I don't know if you guys are musicians, but John is, ironically, we didn't find this out till after we've been working together for some time. John's been in bands his life as well. He had a pretty popular band in the Twin Cities during the 80s.
I'll be damned. So
we've got that in common.
No, we're just a cappella, the Minivate gang.
Yeah. You guys want to harmonize for me right now?
Yeah, no, thank you.
Okay. Well, you have to work on that for the next podcast.
That's right.
The podcast gang harmonies. But yeah, one final thing I did want to mention, that once the facilities open, what we're also looking forward to is we want it to be the kind of place where whether they're retired executives or entrepreneurs or others, not necessarily those who are in the companies we're developing, but people in our ecosystem here in the Twin Cities have a place to go and hang out. And, to be able to meet the folks, we're looking for it to be a place where you drop in and you plop down on a beanbag chair and kind of absorb what's going on, but also say, hey, you know what? I saw that you're doing this. Here's an idea you may want to think about.
Yeah.
And it's really hard, other than the events you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, it's really hard for, we don't have many of those venues to really bring people together.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And that's one of the other aspects of looking to develop in the facility.
And that was one of the thrusts to Minivate, was just to have some place where we could showcase stuff, talk about things that not only the startup and entrepreneur community was doing innovatively, but also companies that were actually stepping up and taking risks and trying different things. And of course, Best Buy is one of the best examples of that. But I love the idea of having a place where people can interact and help each other solve problems and you know, understand availability of other kinds of technologies and platforms and so forth. That's great.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's excellent. Super. Yeah, and this is all really exciting, Marty. And we sure wish you and John a lot of luck with this as you move forward, and I'm sure the community will be very interested in watching and waiting for more announcements as they happen.
Yep, and let us know how we can help.
Absolutely. Yeah, I this is a fantastic idea. I appreciate Graham thinking of us and letting us share this, because I think it's one of the ways that we're going to start getting the word out there. And the best outcome is we start to, you know, steadily build momentum so that when it comes time that the application window opens up, that we've got a good groundswell of activity and people aren't looking at it funny and trying to understand what we're doing.
Right. Well, great. Well, thanks for carving out the time to chat with us.
My pleasure. And great talk with you guys.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Marty.
All right, guys. Thanks, Marty. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Take care.
Take care, guys.
See you later.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.